All right, the time is 3 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. A very good morning to you all, the Eagle FM listeners. And today is Monday, the 26th of May, 2025. And wherever you are tuning in from, thank you so much for really joining us every day, whether it's on website or perhaps the app. Thank you for really, really choosing us and keeping yourself also informed until the hour of 7:30. Thank you so much. So I'm your host, Loisa Shimi, and I'll give you the usual update that is on the economic, on talking about the trade, talking about entrepreneurship. So I'll be giving you that until the hour of 7:30. But before I do that, please do not forget it's a daily notice. Every day I have to inform you to please to kindly connect with us on our social media platform, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Villa News web page on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Do not also forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel, that is Eagle FM Media House. Do subscribe so that at least you can be catching up with a daily news update and, of course, the newspaper alert. Like today, the newspaper is out. Please do not forget to rather subscribe and get the newspaper that is today. And please don't also forget to download the app, Eagle FM app, available on Google Play Store and, of course, the App Store, just to stay informed wherever you go, wherever you are. You can able to tune in from the app itself, and of course you can also able to catch up on the past shows that you've missed. You can able to listen through the app. We have all the podcasts lined up for you, just for you to listen. Yeah, to start off internationally, is that the United States has for years been popular among Nigerians and other Africans for education, business, vacation, and work. But many now say harsh policies by the Trump administration, especially against immigrations, are making them lose interest in the country. You might take a listen to this update.
At this institute in Jos. He says he's seeking admission for higher education in Europe after dumping his ambition to go to America.
I used to be one of those people inclined towards the American dream, going to the US and all that. But I would say I had to change my mind recently because of all the reforms Trump has been making in the United States. I mean, there's been a lot of visa denials, and even the ones over there are being deported because of their visas or one or two reasons for him. And he's not so friendly about immigration and all. So I had to explore, or I'm exploring new places in the Europe, precisely France.
The U.S. has for years been popular among Nigerians and other people in Africa for education, business, vacation, and work.
The condition of living in those areas, we all know what Nigeria is all about, how the economy is. You hear of a place where you could go and aspire to become somebody that in your entire life you had never dreamt of.
But many people like Abalis see harsh policies by the Trump administration, especially against immigrants, or making them lose interest in the country. On Friday, the government halted the enrollment of foreign students into Harvard University in the U.S.
According to the National Travel and Tourism Office, international travel to the U.S. dropped by about 12% in March, compared to the same period last year. Global travel data company Tourism Economics says a further decline of 12% is projected this year.
Public affairs analysts say the situation is giving the U.S. a negative reputation globally, with consequences to its tourism industry. But they say there are lessons for Nigeria to learn, such as building strong institutions and tackling insecurity to reduce the pressure of people leaving the country to seek opportunities abroad.
The government is not developing the infrastructure that could make the Nigerian, the younger men who have the energy and the will, by the time we start deporting those non-Nigerians that are here, that do not care about destroying our society. Honestly, the security issue would have started being resolved.
The government says it is improving governance and doing all it can to make the country a better place. People like Abalis are looking forward to these efforts yielding results enough to enable them to stay in the country. But until then, many of them are still seeking opportunities abroad, excluding the U.S. out of their plans, replacing it with countries with friendlier immigration policies.
All right, there you have it. Now to move on to the next item is that the African Union's theme for this year's Africa's Day is justice for African and people of Africa descent through reparations. Now it highlights the African Union's commitment to addressing historical injustice through reparatory justice. We might take a listen to this update.
Slave trade, colonialism, apartheid, and genocide through reparatory justice. The celebrations come at a time when the AU is confronted with disputes between member states, conflict, hunger, and many other challenges. Let's bring in Dr. Mustafa Ali, co-founder and chairman of the Horn International Institute for Strategic Studies. He joins us live via Zoom from right here in Nairobi. Hi there, doctor. Thank you so much for joining us. Africa Day is being celebrated at this time when the continent is reported to be facing so many multiple challenges. We're seeing it on a daily basis. How do you see the overall performance of the continental body so far in dealing with some of these pressing issues?
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. In terms of the original mandate for which the Africa Union was created, Africa Union has, achieved most of the goals of liberating Africa, liberating African countries. And that work is now more or less over in terms of the physical liberation of the African countries. And what remains now much more challenging, difficult problems of conflicts between states in Africa, diseases, hunger, and basically economic growth that is going to sustain particularly the future generation. That is where the problem is at the moment. I think Africa Union is currently overwhelmed by a convergence of so many disputes, internal disputes in countries, interstate problems, challenges that we are seeing across many African countries, DR Congo and Rwanda, internal strife in Libya, in South Sudan. The country is just basically now a basket case. Sudan is grappling with a serious civil war. And that is where Africa Union has not really managed to address most of those challenges that those countries are facing now.
Well, let's talk about the theme for this year's commemoration of Africa Day. On the back of what you've mentioned with all the challenges that the continent is facing, this year's theme for the AU is justice for Africans and people of African descent through reparations. Why is this issue of reparations a big deal for the AU?
The issue of reparations is a very important issue, not just for the Africa Union, but for all countries in Africa. And here's the reason. Africa was plundered. Africa was raped. Africa was misused, manipulated, particularly by the West. The 500 years of continuous enslavement of Africa and taking slaves from Africa to go and build Europe, parts of Latin America and North America is something that Africa has to be very concerned about and get paid for that. The sheer amount of resources that were taken out of Africa, aside from its people, timber, gold, and many other minerals, including uranium, without Africa benefiting, is something that the younger generation today are calling for Africa to be reparated for. So, and it's not just the AU and the African leaders, most of whom are aging. The younger generation are much more aware now about the challenges that Africa went through, Africans went through, and they are demanding that Africa be paid and for reparations to be made to Africa so that Africa can come up. Africa is where it is today, partly because of the plunder by especially the West, and therefore the need for reparations.
All right, there you have it. To move on to the next item is that in South Africa, is that the Water and Sanitation Department says phase one of the Lesotho Highland Water Project is complete. Now the official inspected the reopened tunnel supplying water from the Akanse Dam in Lesotho to South Africa after 7 months of maintenance work. We might take a listen.
He reopened tunnels supplying water from the Gatse Dam in Lesotho to South Africa after 7 months of maintenance work. Newsroom Africa's Karel Mafokwane has more.
The water department says it is satisfied with the maintenance work done on this critical water resource that contributes significantly to the integrated Vaal River system.
As part of celebrating Africa Day, we must celebrate by receiving our water. Our water must be here in this tunnel. That is why media houses, we invited you to come and witness that water is here. Good work has been done to bring our water back.
Majadina and her department were inspecting phase one of the refurbished tunnel, which is critical to water supply into the integrated Vaal River system.
We used 43,000 liters of paint to recoat this steel. That's 19,000 square meters of steel that we had to sandblast, clean, repaint, test the paint to make sure that it has the right adhesive and cohesive properties before we can allow the water to run. But one thing that we can give you an assurance of, Mr., is this steel is going to last another 25 years before we have to repaint it.
However, the department says they are experiencing problems with a contractor in Lesotho who allegedly contaminated the water supply, causing the delays to the delivery of phase two.
There is a contractor that is on suspension. That contractor has left us out at the site. The contractor must have known better that you cannot pollute the site. That contractor, they have polluted the site with affluent pollution, going from where they are working in the site down to the river, down to the streams, and that is not acceptable.
The department says it will manage the inflow from this tunnel into some of the dams in South Africa, which were overflowing owing to heavy rainfall in April.
Now that this water is here, while the Vaal River system is still full, it does not mean that we must waste a drop of water. Every drop of water still counts. Our water must be used sparingly so that it can be in a position to meet the other future generations.
The water department says this project was complex, full of twists and turns, and often gave them sleepless nights. But
all right, to the time is 16 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to Sudan, is that South Sudan is facing several challenges in its health sector. There is a devastating cholera outbreak. It is spreading in the region. Now, some medical facilities in the north are closing due to violence, attacks on health centers, and a cut in aid. We might take a listen.
All South Sudan depend on health facilities run by aid agencies. However, some of the facilities are now closing due to violence, attacks on health centers, and a cut in aid.
South Sudan is experiencing a lot of challenges. Disease outbreaks, we have flooding, we have displacement, and now we have the clashes happening in Upper Nile. And all these are leading to increased needs, increased demand for medical activities and medical services. So it is not time to cut funding for South Sudan. We urge the donors and other international community agencies to come in and support South Sudan.
South Sudan is currently battling to contain a cholera outbreak that is spreading across the country.
South Sudan's maternal, infant and child mortality rates are some of the highest in the world, and life expectancy is low.
Healthcare workers here say the situation is not getting any better. They say other diseases such as fistula obstetric, which affects mothers due to lack of healthcare management of pregnancies and childbirth, are also on an increase.
When you have cholera, it is pointing that there are things not going well. When you have fistula, it's pointing that there are things not going well. It points to so many things that are not going well, including stability. Because you may have health centers, you may have health workers, but when people are unstable to reach those health centers, then they will end up developing fistula.
South Sudan's government says it is working on addressing security challenges with the aim of attaining a lasting peace in the country. Patrick.
Right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure will host the 2025 Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium in Cape Town this week. Now, the event brings together key stakeholders, experts, and decision makers in the field of infrastructure development. Now, this will include infrastructure investment opportunities with President Cyril Ramaphosa expected to deliver a keynote address.
South Africa possesses a core infrastructure network, including transport, power, communications, sewage, and water systems. This infrastructure has deteriorated over time, described now as an impediment to economic growth. In the sixth administration, the country established an entity, Infrastructure South Africa, to help close the gaps, attract investments, and enhance infrastructure development. The entity's acting CEO is Mametsi Masemola.
The idea was really to bring together critical stakeholders in the entire infrastructure ecosystem, from policymakers in the form of ministers and directors general, to people in the infrastructure financing space, including commercial banks, international financing institutions, local development financing institutions, etc., as well as thought leaders in the space, to bring together these critical stakeholders to converse around the infrastructure, to converse about infrastructure issues in the country, from policy and regulatory issues to issues around building a robust and comprehensive infrastructure pipeline.
Infrastructure South Africa is an entity of the Public Works and Infrastructure Ministry and will play host to various ministers and deputy ministers at the 2025 symposium in Cape Town, expected to anchor panel discussions on infrastructure development and give feedback on the over 500 billion rand worth of projects.
We'll be showcasing what that 590 billion rand worth of projects is looking like, those projects that have been constructed and completed, those projects that are currently in procurement, and projects that are also being prepared and packaged by Infrastructure South Africa. Last year, we showcased about 153 projects, in total about 154 billion rand. And so this year, we're going to be showcasing what those projects look like, as well as the total value of these projects.
President Cyril Ramaphosa will deliver a keynote address at the symposium with new top 12 infrastructure projects priorities set to be announced, including a new construction book with a repository of funded infrastructure projects.
Most importantly, also, we're going to be announcing with the President, President Ramaphosa, what we call the top 8 infrastructure projects that Infrastructure South Africa is going to be preparing and packaging. These are mega infrastructure projects that are require project development support. We're also going to be launching the second construction book, the second edition of the construction book. What is this construction book? It's essentially the order book of government. So these are projects that are already funded.
The Infrastructure Symposium has attracted 9 infrastructure ministers through its leaders forum from, amongst others, Uganda, Ghana, Eswatini, and the Kingdom of Lesotho, expected to be in attendance. Katlego Legodi, SA.
All right, there you have it. The time is 22 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that the authorities says the new cashew processing plant will increase the value of the previously underutilized crop and create hundreds of jobs. Now, they also expect it to inject close to the $1 million annually into the local economy.
Paso's latest bet is on its cashew industry. Efforts to utilize its abundant cashew apples are already underway.
Nigeria's national security.
This new $11 million processing plant in particular is expected to create a new boom.
The idea for the plant came from the fact that Burkina produces nearly 2 million tons of cashew apples every year. And when you look at cashew nuts, there are two products, the cashew nut, which everyone knows is valued, and the cashew apple, where over 2 million four-day counts are thrown away. So our mission is to transform 5,000 tons of cashew apples a year into a concentrate that can later be transformed into other products such as juice, wine, vinegar and ethyl alcohol.
Authorities say the new plant will be creating hundreds of jobs. They also expect it to inject nearly $1 million annually into the local economy.
The idea of choosing the village of Penny is very strategic in terms of cashew nut supply. We are halfway between Bobo-Manfora and Odara, which are the main production areas. So we are going to set up collection cooperatives with women who will collect the nuts from the producers. The plant will therefore be injecting more than 500 million francs a year to buy apples from producers.
The new plant opens just days after the lifting of an export ban on raw cashew nuts.
The suspension measure was aimed at supplying factories at the national level, and we were ready to supply the factories. Unfortunately, the factories told us they want organic cashew nuts.
Burkina Faso's government has expressed a clear priority to address domestic needs, and this new facility will be its latest gamble on the future, looking to transform a byproduct into a key player in the...
All right, there you have it. Now, in Nigeria, is that the Nigerian government has announced plans to resume include oil production in the country's southern region. Now, authorities say this is coming 30 years after oil production was halted due to the agitations by militants and security concerns in the area.
Security advisor Nuhu Ribadu said they have strengthened operations of security personnel and enhanced community engagements with the people. He said security operatives have also dismantled about 2,000 illegal refineries in the region. Ogoniland, which comprises four local government areas in the oil-rich River State, has for years suffered environmental pollution and neglect by the government and oil companies, prompting agitations by people and militants in the area for compensation. They were also carrying out the abduction of oil workers. In 2017, suspected militants in the region vandalized the Trans-Niger pipeline in the area. The United Nations in 2011 confirmed that pollution due to crude oil production in the region has made water and air in the area contaminated. The government in 2016 launched a $1 billion initiative to address oil spillage and clean up the area. The project is also to improve water supply for the people. Tessim Akende, SABC News, Jos.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, is that the avocado cultivation is increasingly taking root in the Garden Road region of the Western Cape. Now, the area's unique climate allows producers to harvest later in the season from September until February. Now, after the main low-veld crop has ended, this opened a window for export, particularly in Europe, where demand for avocados continues to surge. We might take a listen.
Area for avocado production in South Africa. Its cultivation expanded from 135 hectares in 2017
South Africa
to 1,400 hectares today. Last year, the region harvested 3,000 tons, with the figure expected to rise to more than 6,000 tons next season.
What it's done is it's taken avocado production in South Africa into the off-season. So in the Lowveld, we have production from March until September, and in the Southern Cape from September till almost the middle of February. So we have a year-round supply of quality avocado fruit for the South African market, as well as a shelf, constant shelf space for South African fruit on the international export markets.
Due to its longer shelf life and resilience to handling, the Hass variety is the preferred avocado for cultivation here, making a mark in the industry in George. is one of the Agri Western Cape Young Farmer of the Year finalists.
So I got into agri farming from the blueberry. I was a blueberry farmer for a lot of years here in George, and went over to start thinking about doing something new and went over to Abbos. I think George is still young and growing. I think there's a lot of opportunity. There will be coming some challenges, I think, on the way. But the market's looking good at the moment, so I think it's going to be a good area for Abbos for a while.
Most of the avocados are exported, with Europe being the biggest importer. Recently, the market reached a milestone with its first shipment of 21 tons of avocados to Shanghai, China. Tanya Krause, SABC.
Right, there you have it. The time is 29 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock and this early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the last update of the day from the international segment is that the South Africa is preparing to showcase its infrastructure project pipeline for the next 12 months, which over 200 projects is in the pipeline. Now, 34 of those projects are already underway and they are valued at 259 billion rand. Now, this has been revealed by Public Works and Infrastructure Minister at the start of the 2025 Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium South Africa, which is underway in Cape Town.
Ready, and this is the time to deliver. That's the word from the Public Works and Infrastructure Minister. The symposium aims to foster economic growth, create jobs, and attract private investments, especially in underdeveloped areas.
We will be launching the second edition of the construction book compiled by Infrastructure South Africa. This is a live inventory of construction-ready projects.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights
of freedom that are already funded and scheduled to go to the market over the next 12 months. It showcases the real work being done to build roads, expand water supply systems, unlock energy capacity, and rehabilitate public infrastructure. This year's construction book includes over 200 funded projects.
And lessons learned from the past is to navigate red tape and strengthen project preparation.
One of the biggest reforms we've made has been to prioritize project preparation funding. Through Infrastructure South Africa, we are ensuring that public sector projects no longer fail at the first hurdle due to weak planning, poor structuring, or lack of compliance. Over 600 million rand has now been committed to prepare strategic infrastructure projects from basic services to catalytic energy and water investments.
Our work is to just to ensure that from a private sector led infrastructure projects, that these projects are assisted with the multiple authorizations, permits, licenses, etc., that are required across a government. I think we ourselves and the team in Infrastructure South Africa, we know that one renewable energy project, for example, requires almost 85 different types of permits, licenses, and authorizations in government.
The Public Works and Infrastructure Department says it will also fast-track the regulations for public-private partnerships.
We are now going to even allow unsolicited bid to come and be considered. An unsolicited bid is presented and it's considered based on whether there can be no competition in the market. And I believe those were critical steps that addresses the question that will help us to ensure that projects are funded on time.
President Cyril Ramaphosa is expected to address the symposium on Tuesday. Tulelani Philip, SABC News.
All right, there you have it. The time is 33 minutes in the of 6 o'clock. And this element is scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwar Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-0063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And
all right, welcome back. And if you just joined us, a very, very good morning to you once more. And this is Early Morning Scoop. This is a show where we give you the entrepreneurship update, the trade, looking at the economic update. That's what we give you until the of 7:30. Now, to start off, is that the city of Windhoek has intensified its crackdown on informal street trading in the central business district, and following complaints from formal business owners. Now, in a statement released last week, the city said the operation was prompted by concern that street vendors were obstructing shop entrances, disturbing customers and trading illegally in prohibited areas such as Wainam List Street. Now, to address the issue, the Windhoek City Police Service launched Operation My City, My Pride on 13 May 2025. Now, the initiative aims to enforce municipal bylaw and maintain order in the CBD. Now, the city stressed that informal trading is not allowed along Wainam List Street under its town planning scheme. Now, however, it has also designated an alternative trading zone in the CBD by converting parking bays into structured vending spaces, which have been demarcated and numbered. Unfortunately, some vendors have disregarded those allocation, opting instead to trade in front of ShopRite entrances and or even in the middle of the road, now the city stated, adding that these behaviors poses safety risk and disrupt efforts to maintain order. Now, tension escalated on 19 May 2025 when city police officers encountered two vendors operating illegal on Wainam List Street. Now, after refusing to relocate or pay an 500 fine Namibian dollars, their trolleys were confiscated. According to the city, the vendors resisted and obstructed officers prompting one office to fire a warning shot to regain control. Now, the situation was later diffused by the operation commander, and the traders, along with the committee representatives, were escorted to the city police professional standard office, where the matter was resolved without arrests. Now, the city issued a courtesy warning instead of formal charges. Now, the aim of this intervention was corrective rather than promptive, the city noted. Now, the city also emphasized that while it supports earning a living through informal trade, this must be done within the law. We will not allow the city to descend into lawlessness, the statement said. Now, authorities are urging vendors to adhere to designed zones and to engage constructively with the city in creating a lawful and, of course, inclusive trading environment. Now, Namibia continues to grapple with high unemployment, leading many to turn to informal trading. Now, similar clashes between vendors and local authorities have been reported in other towns across the country. Now, to move on to the next item is that the President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah urged the Namibian police force, along with all stakeholders in criminal justice system, to work tirelessly to ensure that perpetrators are brought to justice and that peace is restored in communities. Nandi-Ndaitwah made those remarks during the graduation ceremony for police-based training intake 2024-2025 on Friday at the Oshakati Independence Stadium. Now, a total of 1,779 guarded constables from the Ruben Danger Shipala, Simon Mundumba, and Pius Joseph Kaundu police training centers completed their 9-month training and are now ready to be deployed to their respective workplaces. Now, Nandi-Ndaitwah emphasized the importance of strengthening security forces to safeguard the well-being of every Namibian citizen. We might take a listen to what she has to say more.
In order to safeguard the well-being of every Namibian citizen, the Namibian Police Force stands as a cornerstone of our nation, is enduring peace and stability, and they will remain firm dedicated to its continuous development into one of the world's most professional and respected police force. We must remember Vision 2030, among others, calls for us to have a police force which is competitive to our forces in the world. Director Sonny, this graduation comes at the right time as we strive to strengthen our police force. Today we welcome the cadet constable who underwent an intensive 9-month police-based training course and has successfully completed the training and are ready for deployment across the country in the maintenance of peace and security. I was informed that 375 cadets, constables, have received specialized training in the areas such as border and infrastructure protection, public order management, and VIP protection. This is significant as you acquire specialized knowledge and skills required to effectively and efficiently respond to the complex security matters. Accordingly, I'm asking you to make use of those special skills responsibly, efficiently, and effectively. Director Sonny, at this point, allow me to express my heartfelt congratulations to the commanders of the Ruben Danger Shipala, Pius Joseph Kaundu, and Simon Mundumba Police Training Center, and the entire management and the investors for ensuring that our graduates are well trained and equipped in accordance with the international standards and professional policy officers. Against this background, the government has once again allocated the resources for further recruitment and training after the Namibian police force during this financial year. Our aim as a government is to ensure the safety and security of all citizens of our country. As your president, one thing I want us to understand is that recruitment in the police force is not about the democracy. It's a mandatory services to the nation. As you are the first line of defense between the general members of our society and the criminals. When disaster and security risk occur, what comes into your mind is to save other people's lives rather than yourself. And at the end, you are taking few minutes ago tells it all. In any institution, any office and all. And I'm asking you, this was not just for public relations. There is a deep commitment. That's not myself.
All right, there you had it. And furthermore, she asked graduates to commit themselves to the police code of conduct and ethics and to take note that they are not only the guardians of national peace and security, but also the key role players in socioeconomic economic development. We might take a lesson.
We're not going to the off on the 21st of March to defend and protect the Namibian Constitution and the laws of the Republic of Namibia. That we can't, my safe prayer. And in every time when I woke up, every time when I go to sleep, I say to myself, when I defend and protect the laws and the Constitution of the Republic of Namibia. I'm therefore asking you, as police officers, to do the same. And I'm not only saying this to those who are graduating today, but all of you present. I was very much touched by Director of Ceremony, in fact, Karuma, when she said, when she listened to the oath, it reminds the day when she took her off. And this has really dedicated to all of us. Whenever we are serving like this, one is encouraging police officers either to be present or where possible to watch through the screen so that you are constantly reminded of your off. It's very important. Dear esteemed graduates, what I'm saying is that becoming a police officer is no mean effort. It's a challenging job that requires outstanding mental and intellectual fortitude as well as physical aptitude. Therefore, as you navigate this profession, commit yourself to the police code of conduct and ethics. Take note that you are not only the guardians of national peace and security, but also key role player in the socio-economic development of our country. You must be mindful that the decision you have made to join the police force is very critical one. They will define a critical moment in the trajectory of your career. It is the beginning of your journey as you discover the reality of your professional duty as you navigate through the profession. From this point on, more will be required than expected from you. And I'm asking your families, your friends, to understand the special mission that you are destined to understand that you no longer belong to them, but belong to the whole United Nations, and to be ready to serve whenever you are required.
All right, the time is 48 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, is that an official handing over ceremony was held at Tobias Hainyeko constituency office that is on Friday to present materials and equipment valued at $277,000 Namibian dollars. Now, the event was attended by local government officials, community leaders, and beneficiaries. Now, the donated items includes machinery and various support materials are intended to boost local development initiatives, promote small-scale entrepreneurship, and of course improve service delivery within the constituency. Now, these materials were given to 18 small owners businesses which includes the youth. Now, on this, my colleague David Shombe spoke to Abeltina Hines, a control administrative officer at the Tobias Hainyeko. We might take a listen to their discussion.
Yes, we are continuing with early morning scoop. We are looking at economic development, and we are looking at matters which affect the things of bread and butter issues in Namibia. It was indicated that yesterday at Tobias Hainyeko constituency, there was a handover of equipment from Commerce Regional Council, and some of the beneficiaries, or most of the beneficiaries, are the young entrepreneurs, adults, entrepreneurs, and also those who are trying to upgrade their businesses. However, for us to unpack this, I got into the conversation with Ms. Albertina Hannes. He's a control administrative officer at the constituency councillor's office, and just to engage us on this matter and how this program is working. So, Ms. Albertina, good morning, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yeah, good morning, sir.
Yes, let us look at this program, which is giving material and assistance to those who are trying and upgrading their businesses. Maybe as a control administrative officer, what is the necessity of this program to development of the entrepreneurs and also those who are trying to upgrade themselves in Tobias Hainyeko?
Thank you so much. The essence of this program, which is called the income generating activities, yeah, it's so very important because it's the one that uplifts the small and medium entrepreneurs, yeah, not just in our constituency but elsewhere. Mm. And these people, they are believed to be the backbone of the economy. Mm-hmm. Their operations may be very small, yeah, but they are the one that enhance our economy to go up one step at a time. Mm-hmm. So, and it's, they try their very level best, mm-hmm, although they are having challenges like having access to loans from the bank, because mm-hmm, they do not have collateral with the bank normally demands. Mm-hmm. But as an institution, we assist them so that their business can grow. And when they work hard, mm, who knows, they might be able to get access to loans from the commercial banks.
Yes. Let us look at some of the equipments that were given to these beneficiaries. It was indicated that the value of this assistance is around 277,000, almost 300,000. What are some of the materials that were given to these beneficiaries?
We have equipment for different type of trades.
Yeah.
For example, someone who is doing bakery. They bake bread, cakes, and other confectionery products.
Yeah.
There's those that are doing tailoring.
Yeah.
They are making clothes and uniforms for our learners.
Yeah.
You know, most of these uniforms, we get them from big suppliers, whereas our own people, they are not getting anything. So we empower them, and they design uniforms and other clothes for our people.
Yeah.
We have beautification products. We have a gym. Someone who is operating a gym here in the constituency.
Mm-hmm.
We have caterer. So we have catering equipment.
Yeah.
We have upholstery for those that are making chairs and sofas and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the equipments that we have procured for these projects.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, maybe let us look at the criteria which were used, especially to select some of these beneficiaries, and how is the process? How should somebody got in touch with this? You know, very beautiful thing to do, and also assisting. What is the process?
The program itself has got objectives, which we want it to create employment.
Yeah.
And not just for the business owner, but we want the project to grow in such a way that it will create an employment for the next person in the constituency, thereby eliminating unemployment and poverty.
Mm.
So we look at projects that are viable, that can stand, that can employ others and can develop in the constituency. And also, we want businesses that will use local materials.
Mm-hmm.
So that as we have materials or resources in our country,
mm-hmm.
we also use them to produce our own products and we consume them.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, we avoid just exporting, importing everything.
Yeah.
But then we are able to produce our own things, our own products, and we export them.
Yes, Ms. Albertina, I was listening to you when you were giving the word of encouragement to the beneficiaries, and one of the things that you have mentioned is that they should not sell their product and they must work very hard. Maybe from the side of government or from the side of the constituency office, what are some of the mechanisms that you have to make sure that you track the progress of these beneficiaries? How do you do it?
We normally have a mechanism already in place whereby we monitor and evaluate the usage of this, our equipment. And actually we have a memo of understanding that the beneficiary, they sign.
Okay.
Yeah, so that they do not sell this product, the equipment, but they should utilize them.
Mm.
And if we find out that someone is not utilizing them, maybe it's keeping them or is selling them, then we go back to the memo of understanding to say, no, this is what you have signed.
Yeah.
And there is actually consequences for for not following what is in the memo of understanding.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yes. Maybe the last question is, there are also those, can be young adults who are also trying to push forward with their business, but this time they did not make it to the selection process. And some of them, people have different views about different things. They may think they are neglected or may think something happened. What is your word of encouragement to those who are still trying to upgrade their business, but they did not make it through the selection process?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. Like one of the beneficiaries indicated as he was giving his vote of thanks, he said he has been applying for more than once.
Yeah.
So we encourage each and every person that is out there in the constituency to keep on trying, because we never know when it's going to be your day. Keep on upgrading your business. Come to the office, find out what are the criteria that we are looking at. Because once you have your, you pass the criteria that we are looking at, your business is possible, it's viable, it can create employment, it can develop, it can, and you are such a hardworking person, then upgrade your business and try with us. And who knows, you may come out as the successful beneficiary for our coming years.
Yes, thank you very much, Ms. Albertina, for joining us this morning, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. You're welcome.
There you heard it from Madam Albertina. She mentioned that the aim is to rather give the business people and be able to grow their business and able to employ others, or rather to create employment. That's what she said there. Now to move on, just on this update again, is that on my colleague again spoke to one of the beneficiary to discuss how this donation mean to them. We might take a listen to one of the beneficiary.
Good morning, Eagle FM listeners. This is Baramoshela Lokolo coming to you live from Tobias Hanyeko constituency. Here today we are with Ms. Veronica, who is one of the beneficiaries from this handover that is happening today at Tobias Hanyeko. Ms. Veronica, how do you feel being one of these beneficiaries, and for how long have you been applying in this type of events?
Thank you. I was struggling to apply for this equipment for almost 10 years. And today my name, last year my name was out. Then I get my equipment today and I'm so happy. I'm very happy.
What equipments are we talking about, Ms. Veronica?
Because I get the generator and the heavy duty, but the machine is not even there, but I got the generator for now.
What business do you do?
I'm doing for sewing. I'm doing sewing or upholstery, sewing upholstery. I'm doing those seat covers, sofas and everything.
Oh.
We can hold on this to quickly just pay the bills.
Hello, Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag Your Data Matters.
Got the generator for now.
What business do you do?
I'm doing for sewing. I'm doing sewing or upholstery, sewing upholstery. I'm doing those seat covers, sofas and everything.
Oh, okay. That's how we are hearing from Ms. Veronica. She does sewing. So today here she got a generator. I believe this is because mostly people this side, we do not have electricity. They do not have electricity. That's why now they are being provided with a generator so that they are able to work with their machines. So what is the relevance of this material to your business? How important is it? What contribution does it really bring to your business?
Oh, my business, sorry?
Yes, like the relevance of this generator that you are getting today. How strong does it lift up your business?
The moment I get the generator, because there at our place there is no electricity, when I get the generator, they are going to help me to do my business well, because when I open the generator, then I can use with the machine even for the whole day. I'm going to do my business very well, because I'm doing those canvas or like school bags and everything.
Mm-hmm. Have you employed anybody? Do you work with people at your business, or you are still alone?
No, I'm training people. I have one lady, the one on training, and I employ also two guys and one ladies. We are five in our business now, right now. I'm employing three people and one on the training. And me, myself, also, I can sit at the machine and can do myself everything.
As you are hearing from her, she's an employer of three people. What is the long-term goal of your business? How far from today as you get your generator, where do you picture yourself?
When I get the generator today, I'm going to do a more business because the problem we are struggling on electricity. When I get the generator, my business, we are going to run more. Even I can work during the night and until late because I'm having a generator now. The business is going to do well now.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Veronica. As you are hearing from her, she is a small business owner whereby she does a sewing. And she is on the Mashako Investment CC. Mashao Investment CC. My apologies. Thank you very much. This is how far we are from Otobia's Hanyeko constituency office.
All right, there you had it. And now to move on to the next item is that the Ministry of Environment celebrated international biodiversity under the harmony with nature and sustainable development. Now, this is my colleague David Shombe. I spoke to Gaspar Kasoma from the Environmental Investment Fund just to unpack this for us. We might take a lesson.
Yes, we are looking at economic development. We are also looking at protection of nature, particularly in the Namibian context. On Thursday, the UNDP with the Ministry of Environment, together with various bodies of Namibian youth, have organized a celebration of Biodiversity Day. So to help us unpack this and the relevance of this day, particularly when it's coming to Namibian nature, and also the contribution of protection of nature and also biodiversity in Namibian economy, I got into the conversation with Jasper Kasoma, who's a junior professional at the Environmental Investment Fund, just to assist us and take this, as he has been a panel at that conversation or at that discussion. Good morning, Jasper, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, greetings to you, David, and to your listeners. Thank you for having me.
Yes, let us look at Biodiversity Day. Let us look at the day that you have celebrated, particularly in Namibia. And also, maybe let's start with the significance of this day and the significance of the celebration of Biodiversity Day in Namibia.
Yes, firstly, I just want to indicate that, you know, each one of us interact with nature one way or the other. This could be, you know, how, you know, nature clothes you, nature feeds you, nature really, it's significant in our life. And to Namibia, or as a, from a Namibian perspective, is that we had to celebrate Biodiversity Day to, you know, celebrate the resilience of our country, how we have been really pushing for the protection of biodiversity, and really just to, you know, acknowledge nature and its beauty. And of course, when it comes to Afro, which it speaks to now, you know, your agriculture, food and land use, is that, you know, we have to, make sure that these essences, or rather this sector, is safeguarded. And it's one of the sectors that really contribute massively to our economy per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let us look at Namibia and protection of the environment. How far is Namibia in terms of environmental protection, in terms of policies, and also implementation?
Yeah, as a country, we have been really, you know, doing quite well when it comes to policies. And I want to refer you to, you know, policies that speaks to biodiversity and climate change. And, you know, climate change is just a symptom of one of the drivers that really impact the biodiversity, but then you can take it both ways, because climate change as a crisis can be reduced, you know, with the use of or rather when we are taking care of our biodiversity, although biodiversity is really threatened by climate change. But look,
now let us look at policy implementation. Let's look at policy implementation. When we look at Namibia nature, we look at conservation, we have also seen the continuation of, poaching and also, taking of, unlicensed animals. Where are we standing in terms of that? As poaching continue to increase, where are we standing in terms of policy implementation? What is the barrier in that case?
Yeah, with implementation, one of the issues is always finance. And I want to indicate that we have one of the best policies in the country, which is now Environmental Management Act, that really safeguard the environmental protection. And from a biodiversity point of view, we also have a strategy and action plan, although we are in the process of, developing a standalone policy that really just speaks to biodiversity. At the moment, we have a strategy and action plan. However, we want to have a policy that really safeguard the environment and rather just detail it as it is. And, it's also out, and I really want to appreciate this platform because it's part of the public awareness, or rather creating awareness and ensuring that the public is informed. So because when you speak of biodiversity, many people always regard it as, wildlife, but it's really the whole holistic approach to understand what biodiversity is, from the tiny micro, microbes that are in the soil, how we also, when we are doing our conventional farming, ensuring that the fertilizers that we are using may have an impact on these microbes. And, it's a whole ecosystem. We all, we need each other. So we have to see now how policies really safeguard or rather protect all these organisms. So we have a lot of policies that, from your traditional act to, our land use, all these policies, they are somehow, always speaking to biodiversity.
Yes, let us forget about microorganism at the moment. Let us look at imported animals to say, or maybe some of the endangered species in Namibia. We talk about rhinos, we talk about pangolin, we talk about also elephants. You have spoken about policies, which good policies, but this poaching is still continuing, and as we know, Namibia is one of the countries which depends more on, apart from mining sector, also on tourism. And what is the barrier to effectively implement policies which are protecting endangered species in Namibia?
Yeah, I think one of the very interesting question, and I would say it's it's our collective ignorance, as in, do we really understand how best we can, safeguard our, endangered species? To say that, and the Ministry of Environment, Forest and Tourism has been really proactive in ensuring that we take these culprits, to authorities. And at the moment, we have what we call environmental officers that are there to ensure that policy is really implemented. And, for example, if you see someone doing sand mining, what do you do? Many a times you don't, even if you report to the police, they don't really have, the channel, they don't understand or rather have the best channels on how they can, prosecute some of these guys. But it's a process. And I want to really, inform the public that we also have environmental courts. It's situated in Ochivarongo, where you can do some more, or rather report and prosecute. But all this litigation will help us, to ensure that we are protecting our environment. But we need to, be on the ground, on the lookout to see that no, we are not involved in some of these things, but we can support our government program.
Yes, what is the relationship between youth and Namibian natural resources? Do they value the environment, or they are just busy trying to struggle and also trying to find ways out of the day?
Yeah, with youth, Namibian youth, we are seeing a level of awareness or awakening, But, you know, as a country, we really did well with a value proposition, but we have failed to differentiate between, you know, value and money. And many a times we only think about money, like, what can I get from making use of certain resources? But, you know, young people should be part and parcel of the whole, you know, process, how they can manage these resources, because they are not just, you know, bystanders, they are equity holders in this, so we need to involve them. And one of the international framework that speaks to biodiversity really address the component of intergenerational equity to say that we must make use of the resources sustainably for the present and future generations. So you can already see that within that framework really acknowledge the role of young people in environmental or rather in sustainable use of our natural resources.
Yeah, lastly, what can be done? What more can be done to improve biodiversity protection? And also, as it was part of the theme, being in harmony with the environment and also protection of Namibian resources. What more can be done? Just in few words.
Yes, I think we need to really be innovative when we are finding ways to, you know, or whether striking a balance when it comes to nature and the people. And that speaks to equity, how we are making use of our biodiversity should ensure that the resources derived from this, the financial means that are, or financial resources that are derived from the biodiversity would really be, you know, invested in communities. And I want young people to be innovative, to collaborate, to find meaningful ways on how they can support our government and just really support themselves in terms of how they can add value to some of the resources, rather biodiversity resources. So value addition should not just be, you know, rhetoric, but we should be able to see how best we can enhance, let's say, for example, and I know you don't want us to speak about the micro, oops, but to say, how do we, you know, maintain a healthy soil? How do we ensure that, you know, we are not just expanding our food, but we are making use of that tiny piece of land in a more sustainable way, and we can make livelihood out of that. And yeah, you know, with the biodiversity, is really for Namibia, it speaks to culture, it speaks to your livelihood and your identity as Africans. So I cannot imagine Namibia without, you know, the biodiversity that we are enjoying today.
Thank you very much, Jasper, for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Right, there you had it. The time is 15 minutes in the hour of 7 o'clock. And this is early morning scoop. We'll go until the hour of 7:30. We have about 15 minutes to hand over to the next program, which is Unpicking of the Day. Now, on that again, we spoke to with Toini Amutenya, the Director of Youth for Climate Action Namibia, just to unpack this again.
We are continuing proceeding with our early morning scoop. So on Thursday, UNDP with the Ministry of Environment celebrated International Biodiversity Day under the Harmony with Nature and Sustainable Development. So the event comprises youth discussions on how to protect environment and inhabitants. So we are going to engage with one of the climate action activists and an activist for sustainable development, Toini Amutenya. Good morning, Toini Amutenya, and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Lally. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. So, Toini, can you maybe explain more about what is the significance of celebrating International Biodiversity Day in Namibia?
Well, the significance of celebrating International Biodiversity Day in Namibia is built on the form that we are celebrating life, life in all its various forms, celebrating our ecosystems, and also the services that comes from it. Mm-hmm. So it's a commemoration and a celebration of those significant biodiversity services that we get from ecosystems.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, maybe how far is Namibia in protection of its environment in terms of policies and implementation, if you may to speak?
Well, when it comes to Namibia and its preparedness and also just in the form of implementing in terms of its policy and strategy, first of all, Namibia has built a foundation of protecting its ecosystem for the benefit of its people through its constitution. The constitutional mandate and also through in the forms of national plans and protected areas, and also just extending far as community-based natural resource initiatives. So Namibia go a mile in not just conserving, but also utilizing and understanding the value of what biodiversity consists and support in terms of ecosystem and the people. So it's through our constitution, then we also have the National Biodiversity Strategy and Action Plan. We have protected areas, for example, your Etosha National Park and many others. Then we have community-based natural resources, which are now going to 86 conservancies across the country. And then, of course, us being sustainably utilizing our natural resources through sustainable resource management plan that we have.
Okay, so what is the relationship between youth and Namibia natural resources? Do they value the environment? Or what are your opinions?
In my own perspective, I believe, yes, there is quite a great relationship when it comes to youth and Namibia's natural resources, because we understand the value that it's that is in it. And not just in the form of celebrating it through tourism or using it to get a commodity through tourism, but the value that we are now also seeing where youth are going into businesses that pertain utilizing natural resources, either for medicine or organic practices to generate income. So there's really a significant relationship. What I will say, however, is that we don't quite have a lot of activists for biodiversity conservation in Namibia, who are young people. It will be great to link the two, not just to view biodiversity as a value, but also as services and ecosystems that need to be conserved and utilized in a sustainable manner.
Okay, can you maybe tell us what can be done to improve biodiversity protection in Namibia?
We need more voices that speak for biodiversity conservation. We also need more voices that would be able to be on the front line of policy implementation. And we also need voices on the ground that supports community conservation efforts, especially from us young people. But most importantly is also understanding the value of biodiversity. And it's not just through tourism or ecotourism initiatives, but it's going deeper into appreciating that we are breathing oxygen that is, you know, produced through ecosystem conservation. And therefore, we need to preserve the ecosystem so that they can continue providing us with healthy oxygen, for example, and also our animals in ensuring that they are conserved. And, you know, there is ongoing protection of our environment and all the ecosystem and the life within it, so that we can continue to live in a green and harmony with nature for sustainable development and also for a sustainable future. This is also to ensure that whatever development that we plan doesn't harm the ecosystem, doesn't harm the habitats, or even just the environment where our animals are, that we appreciate and we live in harmony as well. And maybe just to echo on to the human wildlife conflicts that we have, and also the poaching incidences that we have, that we need more activists and people on the ground to conserve and also understand the value of this wildlife and what they bring into our ecosystems.
Okay, since they say the biodiversity is a variety of life on Earth, including all living organisms and their genes or the ecosystem they inhabit. So maybe can you maybe tell us why is it really important, or is it biodiversity really important, or does it really matter, or what do you think about this?
Biodiversity is very important. So when you actually talk about bio, bio means life, right? So biodiversity, life in all its various form, right? And also how it interacts within the ecosystem. As far as us human beings, we are already part of the biodiversity. We are part of a life cycle, right? Whatever actions that we take can either build a cycle or break a cycle. So if you are familiar with the life cycle of life, then you definitely know that anything that harms the other or anything that is more protected or more utilized or not sustainably utilized can actually break the chain. So the form of protecting biodiversity is also protecting our own lives, life here on earth. Is also ensuring that we have food, and not just food, but healthy diets, you know, that we can consume. It's also protecting our health, ensuring that there's scavengers that can go around and, you know, feed on some of these animals that have died so that, you know, they cannot be polluting the environment, you know, or contributing to bed smell or outbreaks of diseases. So there's this ecosystem around us and life cycle that makes up life. And everything in it is very, very important. And that's why me and you are part of this biodiversity cycle. And anything that we do to harm it is also affecting how life would be, say, 10 years, 20 years from now. And that's also the reason why we are experiencing climate change related issues and challenges. Those are some of the outcomes of mismanagement and also utilizing or over-exploiting of natural resources.
Okay, so my last question, Toyini, is maybe can you maybe tell us, like, what are the biggest threats to biodiversity, or how do you think humans are affecting or affect the biodiversity in Namibia?
First and foremost, I would say climate change is one of the biggest threats because it just goes beyond affecting life. It brings these projections of uncertainty for the future and how ecosystems will interact. It's also pushing or let's say increasing biodiversity losses due to drought and other impacts that comes with it. And then of course we have poaching, which is a threat that we humans are actually imposing on wildlife. So not utilizing it in a sustainable manner or conserving it for the future generation. And then thirdly, which is probably the last point that I'll give, but not entirely to say that that's the last challenge towards biodiversity, but also urbanization. We are growing. We are growing in numbers. Rapid population growth also leads to more land needed, you know, for humans to inhabit, and that is pushing wildlife and ecosystems, as destroying ecosystems, either to construct roads. So all these activities can have a negative impact on biodiversity numbers, and also just the interaction and us, you know, interacting with biodiversity. So that's also why we see a lot of human wildlife conflict. There is quite, you know, there's not enough rangeland, for example, for elephants anymore, considering the numbers that we are now trying to conserve. So some of these animals also are threatened by climate change. They end up being in our farms and, you know, impacting, let's say, destroying or damaging our crops and maybe eating our animals. You know, and then we retaliate in some manner. And so there's this kind of conflict, but it's also caused due to habitat destructions, where we are now considering that we do have wildlife. They also need rangeland. They also need productive land for them to survive.
Okay, so thank you very much, Toyini and Tanya, for being with us on the Early Morning Scoop, and I would like to say have a pleasant day ahead.
Thank you so much, Nelly, and have a beautiful rest of your day.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, there you had it from Toini, just emphasizing that when considering the value of our environment, we should also prioritize the preservation of biodiversity. So she also just tackled how essential also to protect ecosystems. And of course, she said that we must also ensure that our action do not harm the environment we inhabit. And so we might take a lesson to one of the last update of the day before we give the floor to Tate Mike Oshavari to take us through the unpacking of the day. Is one of the article from our today's newspaper, that is the Village newspaper page. And now to start here, or rather to start, is that the Standing Committee on Health, Social Welfare and Labor Affairs of the National Council released their report on the impact of the 2008 and 2009 basic income grant pilot project that was conducted in the Ochivero Omitara area. And the member of the community confirmed that the poverty level significantly dropped when the basic income grant kicked off. Now, beneficiaries claim that the household poverty dropped significantly as families could afford groceries, cosmetic, and clothing items. That was the committee said. Now, an increase in cosmetic activities was recorded as some beneficiaries used their combined income to start small businesses, such as brick making, selling ice, baking of bread, and dressmaking and shoe repairs. Now that what the committee indicated. Now the grant came in handy as some residents began backyard gardens to supplement the drought relief food parcels and deliveries that took very long to reach the beneficiaries. Now, according to the report, this led to a rapid improvement in the overall social well-being of the community. Now, the rate of those engaged in an income-generating activities for profit, family gain, as well as self-employment increased significantly, and now that what the report stated. Now, according to the council, they undertook a fact-finding mission during the period of 5 August 2025 and 9 May 2025, citing that they have to maintain impartiality in their assessment and corrective and correct first-hand reviews and testimonies. Now that the committee decided to adapt door-to-door interviews in the two-period mission so as to foster trust and to clarify and misunderstanding that might have arisen. Now, this also meant that follow responses could be corrected. Now the beneficiaries were encouraged to share their views freely, that what the committee outlined. Now, despite a picture of before and after indications at the committee that said that there was great strife within the community back in 2007. Now, the only source of income for the member came from old age patients' contribution and child grants. Now that what we're getting from this update. Thank you so much for joining us on this Early Morning Scoop edition, and I would like to say wish you a very good day ahead, and please not forget to rather tune into the next program that is Unpacking the Day by Tate Mike Oshavari. Enjoy your day.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
The Eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, The Eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwoord Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, The Eye.